జయ గోపీ జన వల్లభ గిరివర తారి. యశోదానందన వ్రజ జనరంజన యశోదానందన వ్రజ జనరంజన యశోదానందన వ్రజ జనరంజన యశోదానందన వ్రజ జనరంజన జమున తీరావన చారి జమున తీరావన చారి జమున తీరావన చారి హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే జయో రాధా మాధవ శ్రీరాధే జయో రాధా గోపీనాథ రాధా గోపీనాథ శ్రీరాధే ప్రభుపా జయో ప్రభుపా నీతాయ గౌర హరిబో 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 గౌర హరిబో శ్రీ హరి నామ సంకీర్తన కీ గ్రంథ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కీ సమవేద గౌర భక్త వృంద కీ జనితాయ గౌర ప్రేమానందీ. ఓం నమో భగవతి వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతి వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్యం నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయే నష్టప్రాయేషు భద్రేషు Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Devaki Nandanaya cha. Nanda Gopakumaraya. Govindaya namo namaha. Hare Krishna, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 28, Chapter entitled Gyan Yoga, Verse Number 27. Tathapi Sangha Parivarjaniyo. Guneshu maya rachiteshu tavat madbhakti yogena dhrudena yavat rajo nirasyeta manah kashayah tathapi sangha parivarjaniyo. Guneshu maya rachiteshu tavat madbhakti yogena dhrudena yavat rajo nirasyeta manah kashayah tathapi sangha parivarjaniyo. Guneshu maya rachiteshu tavat madbhakti yogena dhrudena yavat rajo nirasyeta manah kashayah. Bhakti yoga nadrade yavat raja nirasya manakashaya adabhi sangha parivarjaniyo guneshu maya rachiteshu tavat madbhakti yoga nadrade yavat to nirasyeda manakashayah. Tathapi sangha parivarjaniyo. Guneshu maya rachiteshu tavat. Madbhakti yogena dhrudena tavat. Rajo nirasyeda manah kashayah. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: nevertheless, until by firmly practicing devotional service to me, one has completely eliminated from his mind all contaminations of material passion, one must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes which are produced by my illusory energy. Translation once again. Nevertheless, until by firmly practicing devotional service to me, one has completely eliminated from his mind all the contamination of material passion, one must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes which are produced by my illusory energy. Purport: the word tathapi in this verse indicates that even though the material nature is not different from the Supreme Lord, bracket, as elaborately described in this chapter, bracket close, one who has yet to conquer material desire should not artificially associate with material things, declaring them to be non-different from the Lord. Thus, one aspiring to be Krishna conscious should not loosely associate with women, claiming them to be non-different from the personality of Godhead, for by such imitation of the most advanced devotees, one will become a sense gratifier. A neophyte devotee must, who presumes himself liberated, is impelled by the mode of passion to become falsely proud of his position, and thus he neglects the actual process of devotional service to the Lord. One must have firm and steady engagement in the loving service of the Lord under the direction of higher authorities. Then advancement in Krishna consciousness will be easy and sublime. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vande Aham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Mukam Garo Diva Chalam Pangum Langayati Girim, Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande, Shri Gurum Dinatarinam, Shri Chaitanya Mishwaram, Paramananda Madhavam. Hare Krishna. Reading translation once again. Nevertheless, until by firmly practicing devotional service to me, one has completely eliminated from his mind all contamination of material passion, one must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes which are produced by my illusory energy. Hare Krishna. I seek the blessings of all devotees assembled here, manifested here, and there are many who are present in the unmanifested form somewhere, but I seek the blessings of all the devotees. This verse is too lofty. The subject matter to discuss is way beyond my realization, my comprehension to even speak something, but by the blessings of all the devotees, we'll make an attempt in some small way. So I was just going through this chapter because I have been quite for a long time, I have been disconnected. In a way, I was not here for quite some time. So what was happening is I was not aware of which verse, which chapter. So I was going through the summary of this chapter, which is there right at the beginning of every chapter. So in the summary, it is this verse is very simply translated. It's easily translated. And this the summary of this chapter explains this verse in this way. Nevertheless, until one becomes perfectly fixed in bhakti yoga, pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, one should carefully avoid contacting with material sense objects. So I thought this is far more easy in terms of understanding what actually the translation actually says. Translation says, unless one, and Lord Krishna is telling that until by firmly practicing devotional service, one who has completely eliminated from his mind all contamination of material passion, one should carefully avoid associating with the material modes which are produced by my illusory energy. So I was just thinking, how do we translate this verse into our life? So basically Krishna is trying to tell here that do not play with fire, because it is not so easy. Or Krishna is also trying to tell us, do not underestimate the power of Maya. And or else we can also try to take this verse, don't be too overconfident. Or else, as the translation says, devotional service is actually the antidote to overcome the poisonous influence of Maya. So, you know, various ways this verse could be perceived, different angles, different ways to, you know, really go through this verse. But I was just contemplating what should I speak, because it's far more, you know, beyond my level to even make an attempt. But just to make it very simplified, I just thought of explaining this verse through three different instances. The first instance is, few years back there was 9/11 attack on the North Tower of the WTC, and when this attack took place, it is explained that there were 343 firefighters of the FDNY. FDNY is a fire department of New York City. So 343 these firefighters actually gave up their bodies while fighting. It was such a massive fire that took place after the attack. Now, these firefighters, they were highly competent, they were highly efficient in handling the fire. But even the best of the firefighters, after spending so many years of handling fires and fighting against so many fires, fire battles, they cannot be overconfident. And they cannot be overconfident by underestimating the burning and the destructive impact of the fire. Because, now I'm not saying that they were overconfident, those who left their body. But the point that I'm trying to share is, I'm sure they were highly competent, they were highly efficient in handling that fire. But sometimes the sheer impact and the blazing effect of fire is so huge that even the best are being carried away. Even the best, they become the victims of, you know, such event. So, if the best of the best are not spared, then what to speak of those who are just learning to fight with fire? And above that, what to speak of those who are thinking that they have learned the art of fighting, although they don't know anything about it? It is just like, as Bhagavatam says, Vritha Pandita Maninaha. A person simply thinks that he's a pandit, but he's not. Similarly, Vritha firefighter Maninaha. Now a person starts thinking, okay, he has handled one or two instances of fire, person just cannot conclude that, okay, I am a great firefighter now. So, as the saying goes, yesterday's victory doesn't protect us today. So we may have won the match yesterday, doesn't mean that that itself is enough for us to win the match. No, every day, every battle is a new battle for a firefighter, and similarly for a sadhaka. So Lord is giving here in this verse a word of caution to everyone, that unless one is firmly practicing devotional service, one shouldn't play or meddle with Maya, or don't take Maya so lightly. This is one instance, an example of the firefighter. So we can learn from this instance that even if the best of the firefighters are not spared, then how can I think that fire cannot touch me? Even the best of the sadhakas, the best of the yogis have got carried away by the powerful fire-like influence of Maya. How can a person like me, who is just in the beginning stage, who is in just the stage of learning how to fight with the fire. How can I even think that fire cannot touch me? So that's the first instance. Now a second instance is, imagine a boy, a young boy, who is so fond of playing cricket in his own streets. And he's desiring and he's dreaming to become an international cricket champion. An international cricket player. So naturally, the dreaming is not enough. At the same time, that person, this boy, has to really work hard. At the first place, he has to collect all the accessories that is needed for him to play a cricket. In terms of, say, a guard or a helmet or a gloves or a, what do you call, pads. No, or an abdomen guard or whatever it is. No, you need all the accessories required at the beginning to even, begin to play. And then above that, this boy, he has to do his net practice every single day. Isn't it? Without that net practice, this boy cannot qualify himself. And imagine by good luck, in today's day and age, it's a good luck only. No, by good luck, by any chance, this boy happens to be a world champion. Happens to qualify himself to be like an international cricket star player. Then, now, he has to keep fighting more. He has to keep net practicing more. He has to intensify his practicing more than ever. Because, now, he's going to face a far more genius, professional, and super class ballers, and that too not at his own home pitch, not in his own gully, but in an opponent's home pitch. So naturally, now that he's going to play all over the world, and the world has recognized that person's talent. At that point, if he thinks that, okay, net practice is not needed for me henceforth. Now that I have reached this level, net practice doesn't apply to me. Net practice was applicable only till the point that I was practicing to qualify myself for this international championship. No, that person is actually in Maya in a way. That he's actually thinking that he doesn't need a net practice. Because now, he needs net practice more than ever before. And he cannot think, okay, I'm spending so much of my time playing international matches. And where do I have the time to really spare time for net practice? But now, at this point of time, he has no escape. He cannot. There is no way out. He cannot give any excuse or escape because the classy performance of a batsman is directly proportional. The classy performance of a batsman is directly proportional to the net practice, to the coaching classes or coaching consultation, and how this batsman is vigilant while he's on the field. When the coach is not there, when the net practice is done somewhere else, but now he's on the field, how he is vigilant will actually determine the classy performance of this batsman. So the point is, we also, as sadhakas, we will have to go out in the world. We devotees have to go out in the world and either for work, either for preaching, for any purpose, we also will come in contact. We will also have to face the powerful, fastest bowler, the seasoned bowler ever. That is the illusory energy. Because illusory energy, just as the fastest bowler, he knows the batsman's weakness. Similarly, the illusory energy easily knows our weaknesses and illusory energy actually knows how to know which ball to bowl so that this person can actually be out. So from this second instance, we can learn that how can we not pay attention to our basics. The first is, we saw even the top-notch firefighters, they were not spared, even they were carried away, even they felt victim to the influence of fire. The second, through this instance, we can learn that, okay, now that we have reached a certain stage after practicing Krishna consciousness, we cannot forget practicing the basics ever. Just like this batsman at any given point of time cannot think that, okay, I can now get away with my net practice. I cannot or I don't need net practice any further in my life. In fact, that person will have to intensify the net practice more and more. Similarly, we as sadhakas, when we spend few years down the line in Krishna consciousness, we have to understand the need of intensifying our devotional practice. And till the time we intensify our devotional practice, we will become an easy victim of Maya's googly. She can throw googly any way, anyhow. Now a third instance is, say for example, there are soldiers who are guarding or who are actually trying to keep the national boundaries secure. Now if these soldiers, if they become, say, very much fearful of the opponent army and they lose their confidence, that means they become diffident. Diffident means having a low confidence. So if they are having a low confidence, if too many terrorist attacks, then all these soldiers, because they don't have a confidence to face them, they will actually run away. Or they may run away, seeing the danger coming. So that's one extreme. The other extreme is, all these soldiers, they are now so relaxed and they are so overconfident that no terrorist will ever attack. It has been 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, it's been years that we have been waiting, no terrorist attack. So there is a possibility that henceforth no terrorist may attack. So that may make them overconfident and they may become off guard. And then terrorist may attack at that point of time and that could lead to a major damage. So the point is, they did not be without confidence, or they need not be overconfident, but they have to be confident enough to fight against the terrorist. So the point is, they need to be confident without becoming overconfident. And how is that possible? That is possible by being vigilant again. They have to be vigilant. The difference between a person who is confident and a person who is overconfident is how in between someone is being vigilant. And if someone is not vigilant, then a person may just tend to go to the other extreme. And similarly, in our devotional life, we may become overconfident by thinking that, okay, enough of spending so many years now in Krishna consciousness, I am pure enough and there is no danger of being tempted. So naturally, when our mind tricks us that way, then we will stay off guard, and any time we may get overpowered by the temptations. That's why even Krishna also tells in Bhagavad Gita 2.60, yatato hi api kaunteya purushascha vipaschita indriyani paramadini haranti prasabham manah. So Krishna is telling in 2.60 Bhagavad Gita that the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjun, that they can forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So even the best of the devotee's mind can get carried away. This is what Krishna is telling. Now in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has used this word vipaschita, and he has also used this word avipaschita. So I think it is to Bhagavad Gita second chapter itself, 2.42, where he says ya imam pushpitam vacha pravadanti avipaschitah. And here he is using the word yatatohi api kaunteya purushasya vipaschita. So vipaschita refers to those who have a very strong hold over knowledge, and avipaschita are those who do not, or who have a very poor fund of knowledge. So here Krishna is telling that who are these vipaschita? Vipaschita, they are not karmis or vikarmis. Now vikarmis are those who just break all the laws, who breaks regulative principles, and they are not willing to work within the precincts of dharma. Now karmis are the ones who may want to enjoy the fruits in the heavens, but they want to do everything within the precincts of dharma. Now who are vipaschita? Vipaschita are the one who have clear understanding that material pleasures actually will lead to suffering. Not only that, it will also lead to bondage. And this material pleasure, it perpetuates the illusion that I am the controller. And finally, this vipaschita is he who actually wants to break free of this entire network. So basically, vipaschita is the one who can actually differentiate between matter and spirit. So Krishna is telling, yatatohi api kaunteya purushasya vipaschita. Even the man who is of the cadre or caliber of vipaschita can get carried away. Then what to speak of karmis, vikarmis and avipaschita? And at least I don't stand anywhere close to this vipaschita, so I can relate to this. My God, Krishna is really, in one sense he's alarming us. Bhagavad Gita doesn't scare us, but Bhagavad Gita actually calls for us to be vigilant so that we don't fall trap. And the simple example, but a very, very vivid and a very classic example in this connection is Vishwamitra Muni. Now, I won't go into the detail of that story, but he just heard the jingling sound of the ankle bells, and then that sound entered through his senses, entered his mind, and that mind kindled the imagination, and that imagination led to the further mind being filled with fantasies for pleasure. And as a result, a person of that caliber who performed tapasya for so many years had to just fall prey. So Krishna is actually alarming us. That's the most important point. Prabhupada gives a very nice purport. There are nice quotations of Prabhupada in this regard. Prabhupada says, to act on a thought is wrong, not just getting it. So basically Prabhupada is saying that if we get some thoughts, just getting some wrong thought is not wrong in comparison to acting on that thought. Prabhupada says, another quotation. Prabhupada says, intelligence means to kill the wrong thought before that grows into action. It's more or less similar. Prabhupada says, killing the wrong thought before it grows into action. And then there is one very nice quotation of Prabhupada. Prabhupada writes, Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. So the point is, unless one is full within. Full is not F-O-O-L. Full is F-U-L-L. Unless one is complete or full within, no, he cannot say no to the temptations of the world outside. But someone who is completely satisfied within, that person can even say no to the 56 items that are kept in front. Naturally, when we are completely satisfied after eating, even if the 56 items are kept in front of us, we will easily say no. It won't be an austerity for us to say no. Why? Because we are already full. Similarly, someone who is full within, who is drowning himself, drenched within Krishna consciousness, can easily say no to the temptations. That is what Krishna also says. Raso varjyam raso pyasya param drishtva nivartate. Now, advanced devotee, devotees who have spent many years in Krishna consciousness may also get a wrong thought. And a karmi may also get a wrong thought. A material person may also get a wrong thought. The difference is, when an advanced devotee gets a wrong thought, generally he doesn't entertain with those wrong thoughts. Basically, he knows the art of discarding that wrong thought. The classic example is the example of Yamunacharya. We all know that Yada Avadhi Mama Krishna, that beautiful verse. No, he can easily discard that thought when it crosses his mind. Now, in case of karmi, when a thought comes, karmi will welcome that thought. Now, these are two extreme examples. The problem is with the sadhaka. The sadhaka who is neither at an extreme stage of a karmi, or is neither at the stage of a very advanced devotee. So sadhaka will sometimes say yes, and sometimes say no to the temptations. But moreover, many a times, most of the times, sadhaka will tell, wait, not now. When nobody around is there, I will see then. That's the typical mentality of a sadhaka. So Krishna is here actually not trying to scare us, but he's actually sobering us to be more vigilant. And immediately in the next verse, that is 2.61, Krishna says that one can easily safeguard, one can easily stay vigilant by focusing one's consciousness on Krishna. Tani sarvani sayamya yukta asita matpara vashehi yasendriyani tasya pragya pratishthitaha. So the point is, we don't have to be vigilant again and again thinking, oh, when will be Maya's next attack? That is not what we have to be vigilant of. What we have to be vigilant of is, am I conscious of Krishna when I am getting a chance to be with Krishna through the process of chanting? Am I trying to remember Krishna when I am getting a chance to serve Him? So that is what we have to be vigilant of. So overconfidence means that imagining we don't need Krishna, or I can deal with temptations on my own. That is being overconfident. And confidence means having a full conviction that if I stay connected to Krishna by His mercy, Krishna will actually empower us to survive and emerge victorious. That is the difference between being confident and being overconfident, which Krishna explains in the verse 2.60 and 2.61. And then again, Krishna repeats the same theme, but in a detailed manner, in verse 2.67. Now he's again repeating indriyanam hicharatam yan mano anuvidhiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayurnavam ivambasi. So here so in the previous verse, Krishna said that senses are so strong that senses can even capture one's mind and when toss one's mind away. Now here Krishna is saying, tadasya harati pragyam, that mind can even capture and capsize one's intelligence. So here Krishna is saying that That is the power of the uncontrolled mind or the senses which are so strong, which can actually capsize one's intelligence, just as the strong stormy winds can capsize a boat. Vayur navam ivam basi. Similarly, our intelligence can be capsized by the stormy desires. So, here Krishna is, Chaitanya Charitamrita writes, to think that we are beyond danger is the greatest danger. A very interesting statement. To think that we are beyond danger is the greatest danger. So basically, that is the theme of this verse 2.67. Now, in Ramayana, when Hanumanji, we have seen, when Hanumanji was very small, he was quite restless. A child is naturally restless. But he was not only restless, he was far more powerful also. Power to such an... If a child is restless, it's understood. Child will keep moving from here and there. But if the child is restless and above that child has power also, that means a child hits a wall and a wall breaks down. So child is not just restless, child is really powerful. And that was the case of Hanumanji. Where, he would hit something and something would just collapse. He could just jump high to catch even sun god. And when he started creating trouble for the sages, to the sages decided that the problem is not with Hanumanji. The problem is Hanumanji is small, but he has powers beyond him to handle. Naturally, when someone has power, he has to use it somewhere. So Hanumanji is not able to use his powers efficiently. So they decided, the sages decided to take away the powers of Hanumanji. Now, living in this world, we are also having this siddhi now. That at a click of a button, we can exhibit that power. It's a siddhi in one sense. Or it's a power that we have. And when we get such powers, we have to handle that power very prudently. Otherwise, that same power may disempower us. So basically, now, just as a click of a button, someone can be just transferred to the beaches in Australia. We don't have to get transferred. We just have to be here. But someone can just get the news of the world anywhere, anytime. Or someone can just connect to anyone on Zoom nowadays. Whether the person is somewhere in Middle East, somewhere in America. So that is power. We have developed, or we have, by the grace of technology, we have actually become powerful in one sense. So, what do we do? Should we just give up that power? Should we just curb that power that we have? No, Bhakti Marg is so special. Bhakti Marg doesn't tell us to reject anything. Bhakti Marg tells us to regulate. Okay, when we have such powers, let us learn to regulate that power. So in a way, sometimes someone can just go for a digital detox. Okay, I'm not going to use my internet, I'm not going to use my technology, I'm not going to use my social media for a one day or a one month or whatever. That's the way we can just regulate sometimes. But how long can we? Many a times it may not be possible. In today's day and age, when the social media is so much in the mainstream, it's very difficult. So, the point is, we don't have to reject, but we have to regulate it. And along with that, what is more important is, when we get such outer power, by the force, by the power of devotional service, we need to increase our inner power as well. Otherwise, we will be manipulated royally by our mind and senses. Andhasya merita viveka mahadhanasya chorer mahabalibe indriya namadeya മോഹന്ധകാര കുപ മോഹന്ധക കുപകുഹരേർ വിനിപാതി തസ്യ ലക്ഷ്മി നരസിംഹ മമ ദേഹി കരാവലംബം. സോ ഹിയർ ഇസ് ശങ്കരാചാര്യ ഹിസ് പ്രേയിങ് അന്ധസ്യ മേരിത വിവേക മഹാധനസി ദറ്റ് my vivek, my intelligence or my discriminative power has been stolen by the chore, by the thieves who are compared to the senses. Our senses are so strong, and that as a result I have actually become blind, and I am fallen in the well of passion. So when we get those outer power with us, we have to ensure that we try to go deep within. As someone was saying, now because there is lockdown everywhere, we cannot go out, so let us go in, let us go inwards. So it's a nice way, not to say, but very difficult to actually really make an attempt. But it's an ongoing struggle for a sadhaka to go deep within and access that inner power. And only when we have an access to that inner power can we deal with the outer power of this world. Otherwise, as I said, no, mind can just manipulate us. A simple example is the major concern that Americans are nowadays having. Not nowadays, now it's a current, a different scenario altogether, but it's a concern that these Americans have for these young kids. No, young kids, they have so much power that they can, you know, go nuts anytime, and they can take a gun and shoot anyone anytime. So they have power, but there is no one to discipline them. They lack that inner power. So when the outer power cannot be complemented by the inner power, that outer power will outdo or overpower all of us, and it will create a major damage, not for us but for the whole world. You know, and you know, all of us get bored in life sometimes. And in previous days, when we used to get bored, sometimes we would just chit chat with someone, we would just call our friends, just talk to them, or keep eating something just to nullify that boredom, or just go to sleep. That was few years back. But now, moment someone feels bored, they have one small handpiece which can entertain that person. No? And interestingly, at a click of a button, we just keep clicking, and we end up spending our 5 hours instead of just getting inside for 5 minutes. We all know that. We have experienced many times. So the point is, when any product is available free on the internet, we have to understand that we are eventually the product. Because Maya is going to buy us. She's already bought our time. And not only that, we have ended up becoming attached. And then we will be charged later for sure. For something that is available free, it's going to be chargeable later. So, it's one thing that we get cheated. No, many times we feel, okay, I am cheated now. Maya has cheated me. Or my mind has fooled me. So it's one thing that I am cheated. I bought a product for 110 rupees, although it was not even worth 10 rupees. So when we get cheated, we get angry. And it's sad that we get cheated. Now, above that, when we get cheated, we don't even realize that we have got cheated. That is far more worse. That means, I got a product for 110 and I thought that I don't even know that this product was not worth 10 rupees also. So when we get cheated and we don't even realize that we have got cheated, that is a worse thing. And far more worst is, when we start thinking that, hey, I got this deal for the best price. We have already got cheated. Not only that, we don't realize that we have got cheated. And above that, we think, oh, this was the best deal. that I could ever got. The classic example is Duryodhan. When Krishna offered him Narayan or Narayani Sena, Duryodhan happily took Narayani Sena, thinking, oh, I have fooled Krishna so easily, I have cheated Krishna. But the point is, no, he thought that it was worth a deal. Rather than taking Krishna, it is worth it because Krishna had anyways decided he is not going to lift up any weapon. So it is worth a deal to select or go for Narayani Sena. So Duryodhan is thinking that he has cheated or fooled Krishna, but he was royally fooled. His mind actually fooled Duryodhan so easily. So this is the worst thing, that we don't realize that we have been cheated, but above that, we think, oh wow, that was a wonderful deal and it was all worth it. Now, that's how, after spending few years in Krishna consciousness, this is how Maya tricks us, that okay, Maya doesn't even make us realize that we have been cheated. Because what we have been doing, it just so much becomes the part of the system that we just think that okay, whatever is going on is just going on normal, and it is, there is no need for me to really even go deep. And Maya can trick us in many way. I mean, the one way is Maya can just make us feel that I am senior now, and now there is no need for me to attend any morning program, or no need to come for Bhagavatam class, or no need to even chant. So Maya can distort our mind frame anytime, where we will be convinced that what I am thinking is right. And many times it could be a very genuine reason for someone to not be able to make it for some morning program. But someone, a junior like me, if I start thinking, okay, for me there is no need for the process that Prabhupada has given us, then that is a clear-cut, short recipe. That's why Prahlad Maharaj uses the word Maya Mana Srijati Karma Mayam Balina. Maya Mana. Many times, Maya actually acts through our mind. Maya Mana. Of course, the point is, there are three things: Maya, modes, and mind. And they are in hierarchy, in a way that on the top is Krishna, then there is these three ladies, these three devis, whom we have seen in the picture. And these three devis are nothing but Maya Devi in one sense. And Maya Devi acts through those ropes, that is the three modes. And living entity, the living entities are actually nothing but signifying the mind. So basically Maya acts through the three modes, which act directly upon our mind, and then we take right, wrong action. But from all the practical purposes, there is no difference between mind and Maya in one sense, because Maya can also directly act through one's mind. Even Krishna says there are three places of, I think, lust: Indriyani Manobuddhir Tasya Adhisthana Muchyate. So Maya has her weapons in the form of these paramours, in the form of these lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, envy, and all that. So many times we say that okay, no person is falling in Maya. Oh, he's in Maya or he's falling in Maya. What does that mean? That person's mind is getting deluded by Maya, and that's why even Bhagavatam, the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, gives graphic analogies, gives three main analogies of how this mind could be a greatest enemy for a sadhaka or for a yogi. So in the fifth canto, chapter number 6, right at the beginning, Parikshit Maharaj is asking question to Shukdev Goswami, that how is it that Rishabdev, he already was he's a pure devotee, and naturally he had the mystic siddhis, but why is it that he rejected even the mystic siddhis? So then Shukdev Goswami, he immediately gives answer by telling, yes, you are right that he was a pure devotee, And he had the opportunities to have mystic siddhi, but still he gave it up because Shukdev Goswami gives an analogy of a hunter. A hunter and a wild animal. When a wild animal is caught by a hunter, hunter knows that even though I have caught this animal can any time run away from me. So this hunter is always careful of how to ensure that this wild animal is kept, you know, within the prison cell, within the cage. So Shukdev Goswami says that those who are advanced in spiritual life, they do not put faith on mind. Indeed, they are always vigilant and watching mind's action. And then in the next verse, Shukdev Goswami gives the example, two examples, the example of Shabri Muni and the example of Lord Shiva. Shabri Muni got carried away. No, he was such a powerful sage, a yogi for performing so many years of tapasya. But still his mind got carried away. And he gives the example of Lord Shiva, who got actually bewildered by seeing the Mohini avatar of Lord Krishna. So Shukdev Goswami at that time warns that even though Rishabhdev had all the opportunities to have these siddhis or power with him, he played safely. He did not, you know, just take any chance. He did not underestimate the power of Maya. And then Shukdev Goswami gives the second analogy. The analogy of uncontrolled mind compared to an unchaste woman. So just as an unchaste woman may have many paramours, similarly the uncontrolled mind has many paramours in the form of lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion. And just as when paramours can actually anytime come and kill the husband, similarly this paramours in the form of these anarthas can anytime kill the purity of a yogi. So that's the second example, second analogy that Shukdev Goswami gives. And the third analogy comes in the 11th chapter of the fifth canto. And this analogy is very interesting, actually very relevant, pertinent to today's verse. This verse comes 5.11.4. Yavan mano rajasa purushasya sattvena vatamasa vanuruddham cheto birako tibir atanoti nirankusham kushalam chetaramva. So here Shukdev Goswami gives an analogy of an uncontrolled mind being compared to an uncontrolled elephant. And Shukdev Goswami says that as long as the mind is polluted by the three modes, this mind is exactly like an independent uncontrolled elephant. So this is what Krishna is telling here in this verse, that as long as one's mind is completely pure of the contaminations of passion, one should be very careful. So now, this analogy is very beautifully explained. So mind is like an uncontrolled elephant, and Mahut is the one who actually controls the elephant. So Mahut is like a sadhaka, who is supposed to control the elephant, who is supposed to control the uncontrolled mind. Now, Mahut in himself is very small in compared to the huge elephant's, no, huge elephant's body in compared to elephant's physical prowess. But Mahut still is confident that he can control this elephant. Just as our mind may sometimes take a huge form, like the shadow is always bigger than the actual form. So mind is like a bigger shadow, which actually confuses and makes us living entity, a sadhaka, fearful sometimes. And mind keeps threatening us. So here, an elephant may threaten this Mahut, but Mahut has something called as Ankush. So we also may find sometimes an elephant-like mind very difficult to control because of its, you know, the size. And we realize mind is too powerful. Pramathi Balavadranam. And now Mahut has this Ankush, and Mahut knows that because I have this Ankush, there is an easy way out to control this elephant. Similarly, devotee or a sadhaka, a devotee has Krishna consciousness with him or her. As a result, a devotee is confident, and that devotee can easily overpower or control one's mind. So the god or Ankush is actually compared to the remembrance of the Lord or the holy name, chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So till the time a devotee is constantly remembering the names of the Lord, till that time this elephant is always, elephant, uncontrolled elephant-like mind is always under control. But moment Mahut is off guard and there is no Ankush, the elephant can take on a tour to Mahut to some destructive direction. And that's what happened with us when we are off guard and our mind takes us on a tour. But the important point is, the mind that is unsheltered in Krishna, the mind that is unsheltered in Krishna is just like that godless condition of an elephant. But many times this Ankush may appear small. Initially we appear small in front of the elephant, and many times this Ankush also appears small in terms in compared to the elephant's mammoth size. So we may think, "Arey, what can this holy name also do? Holy name is nothing in compared to the power of mind." But what is important is, holy name is just not the combination of few letters. No, when we chant the holy name, we access that supreme power of Krishna, and as a result, our mind, which is powerful, gets defeated by all powerful Krishna. So it is not our own strength with which we can actually control our mind, but we can access that borrowed strength from Krishna, and that's how we can actually control our mind. And that's the crux where a devotee realizes his helplessness without the holy name. So when we realize that I am helpless, but at the same time we also know that Krishna is all powerful, then for a sadhaka, chanting just doesn't remain a ritual. Chanting actually becomes an indispensable source or the means of survival. So, of course, we've gone way. So Radha Gopinath Rao gives a beautiful example of the tree of life. How, in order for the tree to prosper, there has to be roots, which has to really grow deep. The roots has to be watered, and there has to be a good strong trunk, and then there is a crown, or the branches which gives wonderful trees. So for us also, for an overall development of a sadhaka, we have to really focus on these three areas. The roots, which is compared to one's own individual nourishment. The trunk refers to the overall growth, physical, mental, emotional, social needs. And then there is crown. So only when the roots are strong, then truly the tree really can touch the sky and can actually contribute. Similarly, only when our roots are strong, then we can go high up and contribute to the world at large. But if the roots are not watered, just as a root needs watering, constant watering, similarly, our spiritual life needs watering through this process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Nididhyasanam, Mananam, and so on and so forth. But if it is not watered properly, naturally the roots will be weakened, and the tree may anytime just fall, in course of time when the storm comes. So I remember many years back, His Grace Gopinath Chandra Prabhu, he gave his first class, first Srimad Bhagavatam class, which was actually first class. And he was speaking about this point, that how bhakti mark doesn't really emphasize detachment more, but it emphasizes more on the path of attachment. Unlike other schools of yoga, which emphasizes more on the path of detachment, but still they are unable to detach themselves. And here Bhakti Mark doesn't really emphasize detachment, but still we find devotees, you know, they are easily able to detach themselves. And he gave the example of Amrish Maharaj and the citizens, who were staying in the kingdom of Amrish Maharaj. Amrish Maharaj was himself a Mahabhagavat, a great devotee, but even the citizens were so satisfied that they did not even want the heavenly pleasures. They were equally detached. Why? They were, because they were constantly taking shelter of the holy name. The verse says, Shrunvat bir upagayat bir uttama shloka chestitam. And so he was giving this example of Amrish Maharaj, and then he quoted that how Rupa Goswami, in his 64 items of devotional service, he doesn't mention Vairagya anywhere or detachment anywhere, because detachment is an automatic or a concomitant result of practicing the 64 angas, 64 limbs of devotional service. So Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cheta Hetukam. So when one develops a higher taste, automatically one will develop detachment. And only when one develops a detachment can one truly utilize material things in the service of Krishna. Unless and until person is himself not pure at heart, or he or she has selfish desires, we cannot truly implement or we cannot truly utilize the things of this world in the service of Krishna. And that's not the case with pure devotees. Pure devotees, they are very crystal clear. Their heart is pure. So naturally, whatever they see everything in connection to Krishna. So the foundational principle of Yukta Vairagya is having a selfless and a clean heart. But we sadhakas, when we have our heart which is mixed with contaminated selfish desires, we many times fall into that risk of using anything and everything in the service of Krishna. That's why Krishna is telling one should be very careful in terms of associating with the material modes, otherwise we may also get burnt like those firefighters. So basically he was telling that for a neophyte, a Yukta Vairagya may result in three things. One is a sheer confusion, second conflict, and a third is casualty. That we may actually, land up in a serious consequences. But he was giving the example of Prabhupada, how Prabhupada, because he was a pure devotee, he was deeply rooted in Krishna. That's why he could use anything and everything in the service of Krishna. So I will just end with this pastime, where one time Srila Prabhupada was being given a gift by his disciple. What was the gift? The gift was a watch. So Prabhupada was given a watch by one of his disciples, and the speciality of that watch was, if you change the dial, this watch will show different times of the different zones or the different countries. And Prabhupada looked at the watch. Prabhupada asked, how much is this watch costing? And this devotee said, $300, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, oh, this person deserves $300 for taxing his brains. Prabhupada immediately appreciated this person's caliber or genius of coming up with such innovation. Sometime later, it was I think Shyam Sundar Prabhu who was in Switzerland, and he brought a watch. Swiss watches are very famous. He brought a watch for Srila Prabhupada, and this was also a new innovation, where this watch was a digital watch. He gave it to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, you will see nothing on the watch. This dial is completely black. It is, you cannot see anything. You have to press a button. Then it will show you the time. So then Prabhupada, he what he did, he pressed the button and he saw the time. And then Prabhupada commented. Prabhupada said, earlier it used to take one hand to see the time, but now it takes two hands for us to see the time. And now Prabhupada immediately rejected it. The point is, Prabhupada, because he was crystal clear what can be used in the service of the Lord, when he could immediately decipher, he could immediately infer, he could actually be very penetrating in understanding, hey, this can be used for Krishna service, this is actually not needed. And that's how that when pure devotees, they engage anything and everything in the service of the Lord, the purport says, do not imitate advanced devotees. We cannot imitate the advanced devotees by thinking that because they are also reaching out to so many people, let me also reach out to so many people. Or if they are also not coming for morning program, let me also not come for morning program. So we cannot imitate them either ways. And then finally, one final pastime that Gopinath Chandra Prabhu beautifully analyzed. He said it was in the year 1975. Shrutakirti Prabhu was the personal servant and Paramhamsa Swami was the personal secretary of Srila Prabhupada. And at that point of time, devotees were quite simple in their living because they did not have any ornamentation on their body. The hairstyle was all one. Even the grahasthas and the brahmacharis, they were all shaven-headed. So there was no question of having a different types of hairstyle. And devotees were having one attire, dhoti kurta. So there was no innovation in terms of having any ornamentation on the body. But one thing, devotees, they were very much fond of wearing fancy and expensive watches. So at that time, Rolex watches were very famous. So Shrutakirti Prabhu and Paramahansa Swami, they were actually planning that when any devotee comes and approaches us and asks us, what does Prabhupada need? Then we will tell, Prabhupada needs Rolex watch. So then, they were waiting for someone to come. And one day it so happened that Prabhupada was invited in Fiji by a Indian gentleman who had a jewelry shop in Fiji. So Prabhupada went there, Prabhupada had a tour, and he had the tour of the entire shop, jewelry shop. And finally, Paramahamsa Swami and Shrutakirti Prabhu, they were also there. Prabhupada came to a point where he was standing at a display counter where there were many Rolex watches. And because this was a jewelry shop and Rolex watches at that time were quite expensive, because that also contained some diamonds or some gold, whatever it is within. So they were also quite expensive. And this gentleman asked Prabhupada, how can I serve you? Can I offer you something? Prabhupada said, I don't need anything. And this person, gentleman, he said, Swamiji, please ask something. Here are some Rolex watches. Would you like to take one Rolex? Can I offer you this Rolex watch? And Paramahamsa Swami and Shrutakirti Prabhu, they're looking at each other, they were looking at Prabhupada. And they were thinking, yes, Prabhupada must give this person a chance to serve him by giving him Rolex watch. Because once Prabhupada wears the Rolex watch, then we will get the Maha of Srila Prabhupada, the Maha watch of Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, no, I don't need this Rolex watch. Finally, this gentleman again insisted Srila Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada, he just forwarded his hand and he showed his own watch. And Prabhupada said, no, I don't need, I have one with me. And these two disciples, they were utterly disappointed in one sense, that they couldn't get a Rolex watch for Prabhupada. They didn't get the Maha of Prabhupada. And then humbly, Shuddha Kirti Prabhu writes in his diary that from 1975 onwards till the year 2002, many devotees would approach me on my birthday and they would ask me, what can we offer? And I would think, maybe a Rolex watch. But no one offered me a Rolex watch. 2001, I gave up the idea of Rolex watch. In 2002, my son gifted me a Rolex watch. So this is how Krishna, when we are actually not attached to anything, Krishna will automatically offer us something, what we can utilize it in His service. The point is, as this verse goes, we have to be very careful, cautious in dealing with the material modes. Many things to speak. Time is way up. I'm really sorry for going overboarding and speaking things beyond my realization. I wish to thank all of you for kind patience and hearing. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Rantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.